We all have that one place, right? That go-to spot where you can finally exhale. Yeah. Because the world outside feels, I don't know, too loud, too heavy, or just plain dangerous.
Absolutely.
That fundamental, universal human need for a safe haven, a place to rest and feel secure, it really drives so much of what we do. Okay, let's unpack this.
And our source material for this deep dive gets right to the heart of that need. It analyzes the contrast between those temporary physical refuges we all instinctively seek out.
And what? The idea of a spiritual security.
Exactly. A spiritual security that's supposed to be permanent and, you know, completely reliable.
So what we're zeroing in on today is material that looks specifically at Psalm 34. This is an ancient text written by King David, and it explores what the material calls the only true safe haven.
Finding refuge in the Lord.
Right. Finding that lasting refuge.
What we're trying to figure out today is how this historical, this deeply personal experience of just trying to find safety.
How it was codified.
Yeah, how it was turned into this enduring piece of wisdom. It's an examination of a framework for security that just explicitly rejects all the temporary shelters we build for ourselves.
And we know those temporary shelters so well. You mentioned the student just collapsing with relief when they go home for the holidays.
Or a young child who feels just absolute security wrapped up in their mother's arms.
And we even talked about those deeper, more personal refuges. Like, for me, it's the Texas Hill Country, or maybe the beach for someone else.
They do offer solace, but that's the central problem David faced. And that the source material really highlights. They're fleeting.
How so?
Well, the hill country is susceptible to flash floods. The beach is vulnerable to hurricanes. True, lasting safety or shelter. It's this universal need, but one that is very, very hard to find when you're relying on anything in the material world.
Which brings us directly to the foundation of the psalm itself.
The lived experience of David.
Yes, his agonizing experience. This wasn't some abstract theology for him. He knew the real-world challenge of finding shelter, not just conceptually, but as a literal matter of survival.
That is the crucial context we need here. The notes we reviewed remind us that David spent years in a state of just desperation. He had to physically flee from King Saul.
Who was actively trying to kill him.
Actively trying to kill him. This wasn't a philosophical search for inner peace. It was a life or death immediate need for sanctuary.
And when we talk about him needing shelter, the details are just so intense. He wasn't just lying low.
No, he was constantly running. He had to seek shelter in a variety of places, hiding in caves.
The Cave of Adullam, right, which was famous for being a refuge for the desperate.
Exactly. And he was constantly reliant on the help of others, most notably Saul's own son, Jonathan, who risked his own life to help David escape.
Wow. It just speaks to the utter isolation and terror he must have felt.
It does. At one point, David actually fled to the Philistine city of Gath, and he pretended to be insane just to secure a brief moment of safety.
When you're resorting to feigning madness just to escape,
you know your options are exhausted.
That's powerful. So later in life, after he was finally delivered and established as king, David drew directly on this firsthand experience.
Of being hunted.
Of being hunted, needing deliverance, and realizing all human efforts just failed him. And he used that to write the Book of Psalms.
He distilled that brutal, kinetic experience of needing a physical hiding place into this enduring spiritual declaration. His conclusion, based on years of trauma and near-death experiences, was that God provides the only true, reliable, safe haven.
Everything else is just.
Provisional. Ultimately, yeah. It's all provisional.
So his physical pursuit of safety gets codified into this timeless spiritual principle. Let's jump into Psalm 34 itself, because the structure of the psalm is actually a testament to this journey from desperation to security.
It is. The overarching theme of Psalm 34 is really the necessity of seeking the Lord. David writes about this quest and then immediately details the specific tangible benefits that result from it. He's painting a picture of causality.
And the imagery he uses is stunning. Let's focus on verse 7 because it provides such a compelling visual. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
David writes that the angel of the Lord throws a hedge of protection around those who fear him and delivers them.
That phrase, hedge of protection, is so fascinating because it implies more than just being watched over. A hedge is a deliberate barrier.
Right. It's defensive.
It's defensive. It's boundary setting. It suggests an active strategic defense designed to keep threats out.
And the source material we analyzed made a very specific note about the agent of this protection. It says it's, quote, not some run-of-the-mill angel. Why is the distinction about the angel of the Lord so important here?
That's a great question, and it gets at the deeper theological concepts in the text. In ancient Hebrew texts, the angel of the Lord is often understood to be a specific manifestation of God himself.
A theophany, is that the term?
A theophany, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not just a messenger. It signifies a direct sovereign presence and power. The implication is that the protection isn't coming from some subordinate figure.
It's coming from the top.
It's coming from the highest possible authority. It just heightens the sense of absolute security.
So David is saying the protection is deliberate, it's strategic, and it's guaranteed by the ultimate source of power, not a casual defense.
No, it's a divine cordon sanitaire.
Yeah.
And immediately following that amazing image, David moves straight to the urgent action the listener should take in verse 8.
Which the material says gets to the heart of the matter.
It really does.
It's an urgent personal invitation. It's urging us to taste and see that the Lord is good. It transforms the concept from something theoretical into something experiential.
You have to test it out.
Right. It's not just about intellectually agreeing with a claim. It's about testing it in your own life.
And the resulting status is immediate and declared. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. It establishes a direct cause and effect relationship.
The act of seeking refuge leads to a state of blessing. Mm-hmm. That connection is key. It establishes the relationship between refuge and prosperity, which leads perfectly into the next theme, the promise of provision, and how dramatically that contrasts with the temporary, often destructive ways people try to achieve happiness today.
If we look around, we see how intensely people seek security, safety, and happiness, often by pursuing, you know, what we might call worldly goods.
Our reading materials broke these pursuits into two categories.
Right. First, you have the seemingly harmless pursuits. The material specifically mentioned golf.
Which it joked could be dangerous for bystanders when a bad linkster is on the course.
Right. But the point of mentioning golf, which we see as this relaxing, innocuous activity, is that it represents self-reliance or distraction. It's an attempt to manufacture personal contentment outside of that divine framework.
It's the constant attempt to find peace or confidence in a hobby or an achievement or some self-defined status.
And then there's the second, much darker category.
Yeah.
The genuinely destructive pursuits.
The things people turn to when they're desperately seeking fulfillment or escape.
Illicit sex, drugs, gambling.
Hmm.
All of which promise security or escape, but deliver, you know, destruction and deeper want.
The comparison is stark. You have the harmless attempts to distract ourselves from a true lack.
And the actively harmful attempts to fill a void. Both fail. Both fail to deliver lasting refuge.
And that failure sets up the magnificent promise in verse 9, which deals with provision. Those who fear the Lord will have no lack.
And this is where we really need to dive into the nuance, because this is so often misunderstood. The source material is very clear about this.
What's the clarification?
This promise does not mean believers get everything. It is not a blank check for material wealth.
I hear that, but how do we reconcile this promise of no lack with the reality that David himself, I mean, even after writing this, he continued to face wars, betrayals, resource scarcity. Is the provision purely spiritual?
That's the exact friction the source material forces us to address. The sources argue the lack of provision is subtle, but it's crucial. They get what they need.
Need, not want.
Exactly. What they need described as both spiritually and materially necessary for their purpose. This shifts the focus from accumulation to sufficiency. It's about having enough to flourish, not enough to hoard.
So this isn't a prosperity promise, it's a sufficiency promise in the face of anxiety.
Precisely. The material argues that David, having lived through true scarcity, redefines the metric of success. Success isn't getting every desire. It's receiving consistent, necessary provision under divine care.
It's a bold promise.
It's a bold, broad promise, but its scope is needs, not wants. It tackles the root anxiety of the learner, that fear of not having enough, by promising reliability.
That nuance changes everything. It reframes the security we were just talking about. It's not just protection from threats.
No.
It's protection from the internal fear of future lack.
And David cements this promise by using a final, really potent comparison in verse 10, which underscores the reliability of this spiritual provision over, say, natural ability.
He brings in the power of the natural world, doesn't he?
He does. He compares the fate of those who seek the Lord with the fate of the young lions. What's fascinating here is the animal imagery.
Lions are the epitome of self-sufficiency.
The epitome of strength, prowess in the natural world. They're the strongest, most capable beings, able to hunt and acquire resources through sheer physical power.
So David is essentially saying, even the strongest, most capable beings in the natural world, they can be left wanting and hungry.
Yes.
Their natural talents, their physical prowess, their young lion strength is ultimately insufficient to guarantee provision.
Precisely. They're powerful, but they still suffer want and hunger because they rely on variable circumstances, on luck, on their own limited strength.
Whereas the promise stands in vivid contrast to this.
Those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. The source of provision is immutable, unlike the changing luck of the hunt.
That is a totalizing promise that just wraps up the entire deep dive. When you put it all together, the material reveals how a historical figure's actual physical flight from certain death was distilled into this enduring promise.
About true, reliable, and necessary security.
And it contrasts sharply with every other source of refuge available to us, whether that's a beach, a bank account, or our own physical capability.
It transforms a narrative of tactical survival into a foundational theological truth about ultimate provision. It argues that dependence is the source of security.
Not independence.
Not independence.
So what does this all mean for us? The structure of Psalm 34, framed by David's terrifying experiences, really acts as a blueprint for where to place our trust. It challenges the fundamental assumption that strength equals safety.
It does.
We've extracted some powerful nuggets here that are worth keeping in mind. The first is the specific experience of David, which provides that real-world grit that anchors the spiritual message.
Mm-hmm.
Second, there's the memorable, specific visual of the hedge of protection delivered by the angel of the Lord, representing sovereign strategic defense.
Right.
And finally, that subtle but crucial distinction about provision. Not getting everything we want, but getting exactly what we need spiritually and materially.
Exactly. And to leave you with a final provocative thought to consider, just look back at David's situation. He was facing a physical threat from Saul, relying on his physical speed and his cunning to survive.
And yet
he concluded that spiritual provision was the ultimate enduring form of security.
That really reframes modern life.
It does. So the question is, what current young lion pursuit? What sorts of security relying solely on physical strength, your unique talent, your financial savvy, or any other worldly means might you be trusting in right now that could ultimately leave you wanting and hungry? Challenge yourself to identify where your focus on security truly lies and whether that refuge is temporary or if it's designed to last.